Hello, everyone. Welcome to NBA Unwrapped, where we unwrap the hottest takes from around the NBA. A lot of stuff's been happening lately. Trade deadline just passed. Before we get into all of that, also want to let you guys know we have a very special guest today. Michael Rizzo from ESPN Cleveland is here to talk about everything that's been going on with the trade deadline. Obviously, a lot of stuff having to do with the Cavaliers. We're going to be talking a lot about the Cavs. Also, a few things just about the trade deadline in general, but this is our trade deadline special, so we hope you're going to enjoy it. Really quickly, before we get into all of that, just want to remind you all that you can follow us on Twitter, at NBA Unwrapped. You can also follow me on Twitter, at CorbinMRPK, Perry on Twitter, at Perry Aston, and Michael, what's your Twitter?
It is at MikeRizzo22.
Yeah, so guys, make sure to follow all of us. Mike Rizzo does a lot of stuff with ESPN having to do with the Cavaliers, so you guys are going to love following him. Also, just before we get into it, just remember you guys can listen to us on SoundCloud and also subscribe to us via the iTunes podcast app. So with that, let's just get right into it. Again, Michael, thank you so much for being on the show with us today. We cannot explain how much we appreciate this. So
it's going to be super fun, guys. Thank you so much, Michael. We really appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, of course.
Let's start off with one question, Cavs related, but not having to do with the trade deadline. So LeBron James recently became the Cavaliers' all-time leader in points, rebounds, and assists. He is one of only three players to get that accomplishment, along with Kevin Garnett with the Timberwolves and Michael Jordan with the Bulls. In addition to the leader in points, rebounds, and assists, LeBron James also has the Cavaliers' record for most games played, minutes logged, field goals made, three-pointers made, free throws, steals, win shares, basically any stat, you name it, he's the franchise leader.
It's also also turnovers as well, but I didn't want to put that.
I mean, you play that long and log as many minutes as him, that's bound to happen. Michael, our question to you is, where does LeBron James rank in terms of the all-time greats in your mind, and what does he have to do in order to become the all-time greatest?
Personally, guys, I think that LeBron, as a skill set, is 100% the best player ever. Now, if you want to just talk about killer mentality and, you know, competitors, I think, you know, Michael Jordan is the best of that, and then Kobe Bryant probably following up in suit after that. But, I mean, guys, if you got the number one pick and everybody's coming out of the draft in NBA history, who are you going to take? I know I'm taking LeBron James. He plays all five positions. He's your point guard. He's your small forward. He's a big man. When he used to play for the Cavs back in 2008, 2007, when he was, you know, 21, 22, 23 years old, we would joke around. He looked like a gazelle out there. It's like, you know, his style of play is so, like, unorthodox at times, but it works. Like, Kobe might have done it prettier. Michael might have done it prettier. But LeBron's unorthodox style, you can't stop it. And a man that big and that physically talented on so many levels of the game, it's really hard to go against him, guys.
Yeah, I actually completely agree with you. I think from a sheer talent perspective and just what he's been able to do with all of his physical gifts, there's no one in NBA history that I would rather want to build my team around than LeBron James.
I completely agree, too. It's all LeBron. I like what you said with Kobe and Michael doing it prettier, and I think with this, the grit and with them having that competitive killer mindset, it's just them on another level. But LeBron is the most physically gifted athlete to ever play any sport of all time, in my opinion. So,
yeah, you guys, I think he could have played football, too. I mean, he could have played any sport
he can help the Browns right now.
Yeah, oh, please, anybody can help the Browns. That's a whole other conversation.
He was an All-American high school. Was it tight end or wide receiver in high school?
It was wide receiver in St. Vincent St. Mary's High School. Yeah. He was two jock sport, and you know, as much as he loved football, my God, he couldn't play his senior year. You know, imagine something would happen.
Yeah.
Just imagine if he played football. I can't imagine guarding him. But let's move on to the next question. What do you think he has to do to solidify himself in the NBA right now as the GOAT, where people look at him? And I know with Kobe it was a little bit different, but I think LeBron doesn't have the same respect, in my opinion, that Kobe left with and that Michael Jordan has. And I think it's just a different kind of time, and there might be more talent in the league right now, in my opinion. But I'm just curious to why LeBron has so many more haters, in my opinion, around the league right now than Kobe or Michael. People give them the respect, but I think it might be because LeBron's still playing. But What in, do you think he kind of gets doesn't get the love that they get? Because that's kind
of
my reaction.
So, in my opinion, you know, a lot of people lost respect for him for what he did in, you know, 2010. He kind of left the Cavs high and dry, you know, in the decision and everything. So I feel like he's still got that, you know, tracking him and you know, haunting him at night. But I also think it's just a matter of fact that he's not on your basketball team. You know, everybody loves to hate, you know, the best player. And, you know, and let's be honest, guys, it's happening with the Warriors as a team right now.
Yeah.
You know, and when the Warriors first started out, it's, oh, they're a lot of fun, they're a lot of this. And then they had the second best player, you know, in the NBA, and everyone's like, okay, well, this is getting kind of cheap. So I think it stems from, you know, LeBron joining up with Wade and Bosh and not being able to win it, quote-unquote, on his own and always having super teams. But in my opinion, the Boston Celtics, when they traded for Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett, really set the tone that, you know, you're not just going to be able to win with one guy anymore. You know, we're and Shaq and Kobe proved that too. And when they three-peated in 2000, you know, from 2000 to 2003. But the problem is, there's a lot of egos on NBA basketball teams. And as you saw, you know, we're not really sure what happened with the Kyrie Irving situation. You know, you could point your things to a lot of things. What happened with Kyrie and LeBron? It's how you can maximize that window you have of the great players and the great team, because you know it's not going to last forever.
Right.
And you know, I know that you know, we're not quite into what happened at the trade deadline, but what really happened was, you know, the Cavs, you know, they don't know if LeBron hasn't gave a for sure answer if he's staying or going or not. But I think they did a nice job of, you know, setting themselves up if we don't have LeBron James next year with that Brooklyn pick, being able to hang on to that and the young players that they added.
100%. And for me, I like the term all in for you guys. I know that's a term that goes heavily around Cleveland with the Cavs. They went all in for LeBron James at the deadline right now. They definitely, just like you said, the window of time to have the greats there. They tasted him leaving. They already tasted their window go away, and they obviously got it back, and they won their championship and everything. But imagine losing him again. I know that you were a Cleveland, Cleveland Cavaliers fan prior to him leaving for the decision, so you knew how it felt to lose him the first time. What I just want to know, how is Cleveland going to react if they lose him again? Because I know that it was such a dramatic leave and obviously coming back home. If he leaves again, do they burn jerseys again? And is this does he completely shed any type of popularity that he has in the NBA because he does this to the Cavs again?
So personally, Perry, I, you know, from talking to, you know, people that cover the team and people that are close to the whole LeBron situation, I really don't think he's going to leave. But if he does, let's play your scenario out. If LeBron leaves, I think it'll be more sad than angry. Does that make sense? We would be, you know, okay, you know, at least for myself, you know, I consider LeBron, you know, a tall tale, you know, as some see Bo Jackson as. You know, Cleveland didn't win anything since, you know, the late 40s. You know, they had the longest title drought, and especially for him to do it against a team that lost 9 games in the regular season, would if they would have won, would have went down as the best basketball team ever. For him to do that, you know, against the Golden State Warriors and go off for 50 points, have the, you know, game-saving block that led to the go-ahead basket, it's, you know, you couldn't have written a better fairy tale ending, you know, for the Cavs that year. But, you know, as time goes on and Kyrie Irving, you know, getting traded, and this year, you know, in my opinion, the Cavs, they play like this, like garbage, like this, once every winter. But, you know, it would just seem different this year because there's no Kyrie Irving, you know, and you traded for Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder, and now those guys aren't on your basketball team. So a lot of, you know, with what's going on with the Cavs, it's very cloudy right now. But in my opinion, in my God-honest opinion, I think they're going to be just fine. And, you know, maybe they're going to, in my opinion, they're going to get to the finals, guys, because I don't see anybody being able to compete with them in the Eastern Conference.
That'd be a 4 straight finals, right,
yeah,
for LeBron.
Yeah, they're going to get to the finals. You know, they might not win, you know, but the Cavs, you know, they're trying to make, like we said, boys, they're maximizing the window as much as they can. And I think, you know, getting rid of the 6 players that they got rid of, I mean, sayonara, you know?
It's a huge culture change in Cleveland, that's for sure. I mean, the team, like you said, it's cloudy, but I think the clouds are starting to subside. I think it's starting to become sunnier days in Cleveland. I know we can't really judge how the team's going to gel quite yet because of course, the chemistry that they're going to have to build.
Yeah. But
they were, just like I said, they just went all in. They have one of the greatest basketball players on their team right now, and the window is shrinking. But, yeah, yep. I mean, I'm excited to see. It's a lot of moves that they made this this trade deadline, and it's might have been the most moves out of any team ever, it seems like.
Yeah, definitely rivals.
So, guys, I got off the plane at, got into LAX or like 9 a.m., you know, West Coast time, so noon, Cleveland time, and my phone would, between people, you know, blowing me up about the trades and my Twitter timeline, it's like, I couldn't keep up. My head was exploding. Yeah. You know, I'd never seen anything like it.
Just going off of all of the trades that they have been doing, one asset that they chose not to trade was obviously the Brooklyn pick. Were you surprised that they didn't trade that in an effort to get DeAndre Jordan or someone, an all-star caliber player like that, maybe a Kemba Walker?
You know, I'm not surprised because the Cavs haven't had a draft pick in about 4 or 5 years, you know, a top-heavy draft pick. And they need a young player. Before they made these trades, before they, you know, traded away Dwayne Wade and got all these new players, what I feel comfortable as a Cleveland fan, Kobe Altman, going to LeBron James and, you know, necessarily seeing how he felt about the trades. You know, the first time around, when LeBron left the first time around, he wasn't really that involved in those situations. And I feel like that's kind of what pushed him away from the organization. So at least this time around, there's understanding.
Right, you know, they're on the same page.
I don't think he's going to leave. Everybody's telling me that he wants to be, you know, a Cavalier. But even, my God, something happens and he does leave, I think the Cavs are going to be very prepared for, you know, to life, you know, life after death, like Biggie Smalls, you know, life after death, life after the game. So I feel a lot more comfortable having that Brooklyn pick because let's be honest, guys. Dan Gilbert he loves getting those first, you know, number one overall picks. And sorry for believing that pick is going to be number one because, oh yeah, that's the only thing you have from the Kyrie Irving trade.
Right. No, I totally.
If that makes sense.
It does. 100%. And I think them keeping the Brooklyn pick, it was very impressive to me to see them being able to wheel and deal so much while being able to keep the one thing that everyone's going after. And I know they struck out on DeAndre Jordan. I don't know if you'd really call it striking out. I don't know how much interest they actually had. But,
Perry, the problem was you were only getting DeAndre Jordan if you traded that pick. And I know a lot of people wanted Kemba Walker, but the Cavs simply closed the door on that not trading that pick. And, like we've been saying, I think that's the best thing that they could do as an organizational standpoint.
I mean, you got to take it just in case. If LeBron does leave, I know you're confident that he's going to stay. And I think after this trade deadline, it's much more of a conversation about him staying than it was before with just this team of dysfunction that no one knew what was going on. But I love them keeping that Brooklyn pick because if it nets them someone like a Marvin Bagley or anybody in that conversation, that is a player that can be your next LeBron James. I'm never going to compare a player to LeBron who might be the best player of our lifetime that we were able to watch right now, and he's still playing. It's obviously all debatable, and who knows if we're going to be able to get another player like that. But still, it's a great start, and you can build around a player or at least have a plan, because if LeBron leaves and you're pickless and you're keeping the team you're rolling with, all of a sudden you go from a team that can be first, second, or third seed and possibly going to the finals every year to that, you know, that middle ground that you don't want to be at as an NBA team where you can fight for a 7 or an 8 seed, but it's never looking much better than that. I don't think that's where Cleveland is going to be. I think they're so used to winning at this point and having LeBron James there, and if they're not winning with LeBron James, it was just losing. So I think it's going to be weird for them to, if he does leave, I don't think they can just sit in this middle ground and kind of win, kind of not, hopefully fight for an 8 seed. I see them trying to completely rebuild if LeBron goes, and if not, of course, maximizing the window they have with him and building the best team year in and year out until LeBron decides not to play basketball anymore, which is, of course, the best-case scenario for them.
Yeah, and, forgive me for thinking that LeBron would love to play with Trae Young. You know, Durant and, Curry got their thing going. I feel like, if the Cavs got Trae Young and it was LeBron and Trae Young versus Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, that'd be, that'd be something you'd want to get your popcorn for.
100%. Wow, that's, I haven't even thought of the Trae Young scenario to the Cavs right now. And
yeah, I mean, wow. But let's be honest, guys. If they got the number one pick, they're gonna, you know, I think they're gonna take Trae Young. They lost their franchise point guard. Okay, you give up your franchise point guard, you get that pick, and you take your franchise point guard, you know, to the draft.
You think Trae Young, they go him number one overall if they have the number
one overall pick? In my God honest opinion, I think, you know, you take a guy like Trae Young. I haven't seen a guy shoot the ball like that in college since Steph Curry. So I know the Oakland team is the Oklahoma team has been struggling as of recent. They've dropped a couple games in the Big 12, but you look at that kid's numbers, man. He had a tough game against his dad's alma mater, against Texas Tech, but after that, he's shooting 50% from the field. He might be taking 13 threes, but he's making 6 or 7 of them. So, you know, 50% of those balls are going in, and he's pulling up from, let's be honest, guys, he's pulling up from Steph Curry range.
Right, yeah, and I mean, he's doing things as a freshman, what Steph Curry could have only dreamt about doing as a junior at Davidson. Steph Curry,
yeah.
His last year in college, he was nowhere near this good. Trae Young's
and Corbin, I don't know if you've been watching, he can get to the hole, too. He gets fouled.
He's got an all-around game. He's scary.
Yeah, he shoots free throws, and, you know, I love players, you know, along the caliber that love getting the free throw line. You know, Harden gets the free throw line. Victor Oladipo gets the free throw line. So it's like, you know, and anything to get, you know, free open looks at the hoop, you know, sign me up. I know the Cavs are high, you know, one bright spot the Cavaliers had, you know, in this first half of the season was they were, you know, very good free throw shooters.
Let's focus in a little more on LeBron James, talking about, obviously, as long as he's in Cleveland, they are going to be contenders. My thinking is, no matter what players are around him, if he's in the East, whatever team he is on is the favorite to come out of the East. I know there's been a lot of turmoil going on with the Cavs, especially this year. It seems like every year around this time, something's happening with them. It's just this year, for whatever reason, it's worse than it has been in the last few years. But with LeBron James, he's just recently turned 33 years old, a little over a month ago, 15 years in the NBA. You look at comparable players to him coming right out of high school and being stars, such as Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant, his 17th year in the league, he was going strong, and then injuries caught up with him with his ruptured Achilles. How much longer do you think LeBron James has at being the best player in the NBA?
I think he's got a solid two years left. Next year, I think he'll dominate, and I think the year after that, he'll dominate. And maybe that third year, it'll be like, okay, you know, he's still the Don, he's still King James, he's still our best player on our team, but at the same time, you saw it happening with Kobe, too. You know, when Kobe won those championships late in his career, people were really starting to consider, you know, LeBron the best player, you know, single-handedly best player, but at the same time, you can never count out Kobe Bryant, and you can never count out LeBron James, even though they're not the best players in the league. Those guys, I mean, my goodness, guys, how many minutes and blood, sweat, and tears have LeBron and Kobe have been able to put into the playoffs? Yeah. So, you know, it's even if he's not the best player in the league, I don't care what team he's on, he's going to be able to be contending for championships. And I know just him as a physical presence and mental presence, being there for his teammates. You know, a lot of people like playing with LeBron James. I know it didn't really work out with Isaiah Thomas and Trey Crowder, but I mean, my goodness, I'm so, like these young kids that the Cavs just got, they're thrilled. They grew up watching LeBron. I know Perry's 20, you know, close to 22 years old. I'm 23 years old. We grew up watching LeBron. And, you know, kids like Larry Nance and Clarkson, who are 23, 24, 25, trust me, they're thrilled to be there. And,
well,
you know,
well, them especially, Larry Nance and Clarkson, they got to play with Kobe Bryant in the beginning of their career. So now they get to play with debatably the two best players of all time, depending on who you are.
Yeah,
you know, and that's
a great point.
What a blessing just to have watching film with you. You know, Kobe's coming out with that new show, Detail, which is a deeper look into basketball, you know, analyzing game tape with Kobe Bryant. So just imagine people watching that show are going to be dialing into that, just in awe, looking at how Kobe dissects the game. Imagine having him as a teammate, and then once he retires, you get to go a year or two by yourself, and then you get to move on to LeBron James as your next teacher. So for those two kids there, they have the best teaching, best mentorship out of any players you can ever imagine. They're
ecstatic. Perry, where do we sign up for that scholarship? Where do we sign up for that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd argue, though, that the dynamic is much different, because with Clarkson and Nance, I believe both of them had two, or Clarkson had 2 years. Clarkson had 3 years with Kobe, and Nance had two, but it was all post-Achilles injury. And Kobe, being the alpha dog that he was, whatever team he was on, he was going to be the one dominating the ball. So they had to defer to a star that really wasn't a star anymore. You look at the advanced statistics on him his last 3 years. He was one of the much, I'm not going to say one of the worst players in the league, but definitely not anywhere close to what he used to be. Now they go to Cleveland with LeBron James. They got to defer to another star who probably isn't quite as much of an alpha dog, but still obviously the alpha dog of the Cavs. But it's just that now you're deferring to someone who is unquestionably the best player in the NBA.
He's still in his prime. I know it's the end of it, but it's still, he's still playing at the highest level that you physically can play at the NBA. So they get to watch that firsthand instead of, they got to reap the Kobe benefits more from the mentorship side. And of course, when he was injured, imagine having an injured Kobe on your team. Someone who's not even focusing on playing. He gets to just focus on helping out. Like, I can't even imagine that. That was, I'm sure, the most attention Kobe was able to give. I know he has a really good relationship with a lot of the young Lakers players. And I'm pretty sure, I don't want to say this for sure, but Nance and Clarkson both took numbers 8 and 24 going to the Cavaliers. So
yep.
That has to be,
yep,
paying, that has to be paying homage to Kobe Bryant. That's has to be respect to them. There's no way that coincidence shows two Lakers go over there and they happen to each take one of Kobe's numbers. Do you think that's coincidence, or do you think that was homage to Kobe Bryant?
I think it's homage to Kobe. I mean, I felt bad that Kobe wasn't able to stir up a couple of good seasons in the twilight end of his career, but you've seen what he's done for the NBA and how much he really means to, you know, the NBA family and just everything in general. Who wouldn't want Kobe Bryant on their team if it's in a broadcast booth or if it's on a basketball team or some way associated with the team? So kudos to Jordan Clarkson and Nance Jr. for doing that. Now, they asked Nance Jr. if he wanted to wear his dad's number that's hanging in the rafters.
They were going to let him wear his number, even though he was retired?
Yeah, he was. There was a rumor that he was going to be wearing his dad's number, but he shut that down.
That would have been pretty cool, but I'm sure he wants to start his own legacy in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's kind of what he said in a nutshell.
Do you think he's going to whip out the cape that his dad used for this dunk contest?
He should. I mean, come on, why? 100%. If you're him, why wouldn't you?
100%.
You know?
I think
it's about time the Cavs finally have someone in the dunk contest.
Yeah,
my
and
God,
it's got to be so weird for him.
We've been waiting forever, it seems. Like, you know, we always wanted LeBron to do it, and he never did it. You know, Ricky Davis and Darius Miles, I don't know if you guys even know who the hell those guys are, but
yeah,
they,
100%.
They used to be high-flying dunkers for the Cavs, you know.
Why do you think LeBron James never participated in the dunk contest?
I feel like, you know, LeBron kind of, it's not that he hates being compared to Jordan, but, like, I think he didn't want to do, you know, everything that Jordan did. Does that kind of make sense to you? Like, I just feel like it's not that he thought he was in Jordan's shadow or anything, but I just feel like, you know, he always felt himself as above it, I think. I think it just wasn't for him.
I think everyone was just begging him to do it for so long. I think he was almost enjoying teasing the NBA by
being like,
you could see how I play on the court, but, you know, why would I just give it to you that easy? You know, like, why don't you guys just keep it to your imagination?
Yeah, I mean, there was that one year in 2009 during the dunk contest when he was sitting courtside and they interviewed him and he said LeBron James is preliminarily putting his name in the 2010 NBA dunk contest, so we all got excited, but then next year came around and he just didn't do it. It's an interesting point that you bring up with him not wanting to be compared to Michael Jordan. It seems like as his career has gone on and he had such unbelievably high expectations coming into the NBA, probably higher than any other player has before him and since. Yeah, ever. But it seems like as his career has gone on, he started to be comfortable with comparing his career to Jordan a little more. He had an interview, I think it was during the last offseason, talking to someone about how he's chasing a ghost with those 6 rings. Yeah, so just, I don't know, my take is just that maybe as he's seen he can actually do this. He is on that level, and now he starts to get a little bit more comfortable with it. It's just too bad we never saw him in the dunk contest.
It's definitely too late now, but of course...
I'd still love to see him in the dunk contest.
I think he would still be able to win. What do you think, Michael? I think right now, if he got in the contest right now, I know he'd be playing with all the rookies and the young guns that are about to dunk in the contest, but do you think LeBron wins?
I'm solely convinced LeBron could win any contest.
Yeah, you never count LeBron out.
Even the 3-point contest, I think he can pull out of his butt.
Yeah. All right, so just going back to the trade deadline a little bit. So Cavaliers, new players they picked up, George Hill, Rodney Hood, Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance Jr. Which one of those players do you think is going to contribute most to the Cavaliers this season?
It's got to be Hood. Yeah. I mean, I'm interested to see how LeBron, plays with Rodney Hood. He's never had, a true lefty jump shooter. LeBron has always played with these fantastic shooters. If it's, Ray Allen, Kyle Korver, Shane Battier, Eddie House, knockdown 3-point shooters. So I am really, really looking forward to seeing how Rodney Hood, shoots the ball outside the perimeter, but he's also got more than that to his game. So I think Rodney Hood definitely will have the most impact on the offensive end, but I really want to see how, Nance will excel, because I think Larry Nance is going to start taking minutes from Tristan Thompson, personally.
As he should. I'm not a huge Tristan Thompson fan. I don't know how you feel about his game. I think it's very one-dimensional, and it's hit or miss. When he's playing well, he's contributing to the defensive end and rebounding, which is what you're hoping for from him. But when he's not doing well, and he's not even doing those correctly, it's really just having an extra body on the court that almost gets in the way sometimes. I know he's been playing slightly better as of late. I'm just not a big fan of – he's not a very modern big man to me, and I can't really find a way for him to work on the Cavaliers. I really hate that they keep trying to fix it. But for me, I love what you just said with Larry Nance Jr. As a Laker fan, I got to see his development firsthand. He is the perfect role player that you want on any team. He's going to put up an extremely high field goal percentage, not take any stupid shots. He's going to be – hustling on the defensive end, blocking shots, dunking on people. He's exciting to have, and he really just started finding his niche with the Lakers, and his numbers were starting to actually vastly improve. He's in the dunk contest. He's becoming a lot higher profile of a player now, and I think in Cleveland it's going to be a perfect chance for him to carve out a role there for a contender. And I don't think his development was going to go a little quicker with the Lakers because of the fact that he was seeing the court a little bit more, and there was more of a need for players on the Lakers than there is for LeBron's Cavs, of course. But just like you said, I think he's going to start stealing minutes from Tristan Thompson. And if Ty Lue is smart, he's going to let that happen, because Larry Nance Jr. is extremely efficient on both ends. And he's a player that when you're looking at plus minus, it's off the roof. He's barely ever in the negatives. He's always contributing on the court, even if it's off the box score. So I really like that comment you just made about Nance.
Yeah, so I'll say this about Tristan Thompson. Great guy. Met him a couple times. You don't win without him in 2016. The amount of offensive rebounds, second chance points, and possessions he was able to extend it changed games. It changed the output on all these games. But in the end of the day, guys, if you're getting paid $80 million over the course of 4 years and your stat line, it's 4 points a game and 4 rebounds a game, come on, man. When the Cavs wanted to give him all that money in the first time, I just go, okay, my biggest worry is that he's not going to be anywhere more active than he already is. He's not going to be hungry because he's going to get paid. I hate you see it so many times, guys. It seems like players, are fighting for that contract and putting blood, sweat, and tears onto the court. It's not that I'm questioning his passion for the game or anything like that. I haven't seen a motor in Tristan Thompson since the 2016 season.
I don't see an eye of the tiger from him either. He's not that player that you can see him when he gets locked in. It's like, get out of his way kind of thing. It's not like that. If anything, he's able to he's more physical than some guys on possessions, and that's why he's very good on the offensive boards especially, which impresses me the most from his game. But it's just not enough for me. I want a big guy that's able to bang down low, of course, but add a second dimension to the game. I feel like with him, he's just a little bit too inconsistent for me. I know you said he was such a big part of that finals run, but the contract he's on, you need to be that big part of that finals run the way
Terry, they couldn't give it away. Let me tell you, they tried actively to trade and put Tristan Thompson into these deals and get, you know, they've already paid $40 million. It's been a year and a half, so, you know, it's half of the contract. It's 3 years. So, you know, they're still on the hook for $40 million, and, you know, Kobe Altman tried moving it. Nobody wanted to take on that contract. I'm very surprised someone took on Iman Shumpert's remaining dollars on his contract.
Yeah.
And you saw what happened in Utah. They bought out Derrick Rose. He's, you know, they waived him. They waived that guy. So basically, if I'm Utah and you know, I swap Rodney Hood for Jay Crowder, I think the Cavs won that, guys. I don't know, easily.
100%. Yeah. I was actually reading a couple articles from Hoops Hype and other different sources that I look at, and they were all quoting former players and current NBA players that all usually talk anonymously so that there's no drama or anything like that, but they're able to share their true thoughts. What I was reading mainly was just the reaction on the trade deadline. Every single quote that I read was something about Rodney Hood and how he's about to ball out for the Cleveland Cavaliers, how he is the hidden gem in this trade, and how nobody, unless they're really digging into the NBA, really realizes what a special player that he is. And he's just been, hasn't been able to be showcased as much as he should in Utah, and not a big market there. And being next to LeBron James, you can't have a bigger market. I don't care if you're in Cleveland or where you are. Being next to LeBron James is its own market in its own. So for him going there, you just said he's a left-handed shooter. He's crafty. He can get to the rim. He's so exciting and athletic. He's the most exciting part of that trade. I totally agree with you. But yeah, what I was reading with these quotes was that these players were so high on his game and just so half worried, half excited, depending on the situation you're in and what team you're on, about this pairing, because it's people aren't talking about it enough. And that was a big thing for Cody Altman. I also read Hood was on his radar since the beginning, and they were just trying to figure out a way to get him there. But I love that trade.
Yep. And, you know, another Clarkson, you know, you guys know more than I do about him, but I know he's a knockdown shooter. I was talking to a couple of my buddies, and they kept asking me, you know, the Cavs making a move. I said, well, I don't think they're moving the Brooklyn pick. You know, I don't know how dramatic it's going to get, but my goodness, it got pretty dramatic for Cleveland during the deadline.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, and I mean, Clarkson, especially this year, he's taken huge strides. Just his efficiency off of the bench when he was with the Lakers as their sixth man, kind of taking, to a lesser extent, Lou Williams' role when he was on the Lakers the previous year and a half before he got traded to the Rockets. You guys got someone who's going to be really efficient off the bench, something that you guys haven't had for, it seems like, a long time.
Yeah, and a word that someone described him as that I loved, they called him a microwave, just he can heat up in seconds. And I loved that comparison, because watching his game, his offense is what you're looking at. You don't put him in there for his defense, which isn't a liability.
Perry, what you're saying is he has the microwave badge in 2K.
He's on fire. His defense isn't a liability either. He's an athletic 6'5" shooting guard that can body up guys that Isaiah Thomas physically just can't. So when you're looking
runs
at his defense,
runs the point too, Perry. He runs the point too sometimes.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So Jordan Clarkson, he's a two naturally, but he can also play.
Combo guard.
He can also play. He can play the number one. He can fill. He can even play a three spot if you really needed him to. So if you're trying to go with a smaller lineup, he's super versatile, and you don't have a guy off the bench that you can call in and just drain. It used to be what JR used to do. He was your microwave there. You put him in. I know he's starting right now. I don't know how much longer that's going to last there with him in the starting lineup. But this is your second coming of JR for me. And it's not. He's not a defensive liability. And he's only progressed so much. He's going to continue to progress. And we really got to see his raw talent when he went in pretty much for Kobe Bryant when he went down. And you got to see the second round pick in his rookie year outplaying what everyone thought he was going to play as, and just seeing his pure athleticism. So since his rookie year, he's made huge strides. And just like Corbin said, a comparison to Lou Williams with the role that he played as six man.
And do you want to know another name I think he plays like? Courtney Lee. Do you guys remember him in his heyday? He reminds me a lot of Courtney Lee.
Yeah, 100%. Just a ton of energy. And he's a high flyer and can space out the floor with his three-point shooting as well. So I like that comparison also.
Yeah, and definitely just going back to his defense, before this year, he was a liability on the defensive end, but he really made an effort to improve on the defensive side of the ball, and that's part of what's made him such a more efficient player than in years past. So, yeah, you guys got a really good one with Jordan Clarkson. Speaking about just the Lakers and Cavaliers with the trade, so when the Cavaliers were playing the Hawks, there was a chant that broke out. I'm sure you heard it, probably reported on it, when Tristan Thompson was at the line, Atlanta fans chanting, "LeBron's going to leave you." Obviously, the Lakers and the Cavs are two of the biggest suitors for LeBron James this offseason. Brian Windhorst went on SportsCenter right after the trade happened and explained how basically this trade helps both teams with regard to getting LeBron James. It clears some cap room for the Lakers, and they now have a clear path to getting enough cap room to where they can get two max level free agents. On the Cavs side, obviously, there's more help there for LeBron James if he does come back. Which team, the Cavs or the Lakers, do you think this trade helped more in their pursuit of LeBron James this offseason?
And I know that you don't think LeBron's coming to LA naturally, but just off what the teams were able to do to put themselves in that position, who do you think put themselves in a better spot for LeBron?
So, you know, I'll start with the Los Angeles take. It all depends who they get in free agency as well.
Right.
LeBron's not just going to go there to play with Lonzo Ball and Isaiah Thomas again. It's, you know, I know Isaiah's only on that 1 year deal, but until it, you know, what can you offer me? You know, who could offer me the best? And as of right now, the Lakers can just offer him money and, you know, the promise that, you know, somebody's going to come because, okay, but guys, it's been 3-4 years now. The Lakers haven't made the playoffs. They've even sniffed it.
And it seems like every year they swing and miss on these high profile free agents.
Yeah, like they haven't, like Perry, like you said, they haven't gotten any.
Right.
So I know they added Magic Johnson and what's his name? Thank you. Yes, and I know he knows what he's doing too. But you know, it's going to be tough to convince a player to commit on something where you know other players in the league haven't committed on. Now on the Cleveland factor. Not only did we get younger and get rid of a lot of the baggage, you know, next year you could buy out Tristan Thompson's contract. You could buy out all these contracts that you don't want and or get rid of them. And, you know, the Cavs can put themselves in a situation where they could sign somebody. So, you know, I really don't agree with the take, you know, and it's a hot take. I understand it. I don't agree with the take that people don't want to play with LeBron James. I just don't really necessarily see that. Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder were forced into Cleveland because of a certain player wanting to be out of Cleveland or else. I don't know if you guys heard, Kyrie threatened the Cavs with season-ending knee surgery if they didn't trade him.
Yeah,
so
I heard that. And, you know, that's crazy in its own because...
Yeah, and you know, everything that is happening to the Cavs right now, and it's all because of that situation that happened. You know, in the early comings of, in the late comings before training camp, the NBA starting. But, you know, back to the original question, it's what can you do for me in LA and how are you, you know, going to be better than my current situation? And as for Cleveland, his family loves it. Savannah, his wife is from here. I really believe that LeBron wants his kids to go to St. Vincent, St. Mary's. And it's one of those things that if he leaves again, it'll be like, you know, kind of like a really, like I said, it'd be more sad than angry, but it'd also be like, really? Like, you're really going to leave again? But in my opinion, if he leaves, he leaves, okay? I'm going to be sad, but I'm still going to be a LeBron James fan. He brought me a championship. My goodness, my dad's 57, 56 years old, and the last championship he saw, he was 4 years old. So, you know, it might be the only one that I ever see in my lifetime as a Cleveland fan. You know, I'm going to thank him for it, but you know, it's anyone's ball game when it's LeBron James. You don't know what he's going to do. It seems like he always has the upper hand in his contracts. Like this year, you know, it's ridiculous that people would even think that the Cavs would trade LeBron James. But he said he wasn't going to waive his no trade clause. He wants to stay in Cleveland for the remainder of the year. So I feel like the Cavs, what they did at the trade deadline helped, but it also, you know, put the Lakers in a situation where they could get a couple of superstars and be like, hey, LeBron, we have this going on. What do you think?
Right. Yeah, and I mean, on the Lakers' front, it obviously doesn't help them with the DeMarcus Cousins injury. I think they'd be stupid to offer him a max deal, anyone coming off of an Achilles injury.
As you guys know, in LA too.
Unfortunately,
really got Kobe.
Yeah, it's just in my mind, it's the worst injury to have in sports. It just completely saps players of their athleticism. With Cousins off the board, really the only two stars. Westbrook, there was some talk about him, and then he signed the 5-year extension. Klay Thompson the year after, but LeBron James free agent this year. So the only way, and I agree, he's not coming by himself. So the only way to get him is if Paul George comes. He's the only other superstar that's available. And, I mean, there's been different reports out of there. Paul George has been talking about how much he loves Oklahoma City, but he's also said he went on the record as saying, just because I'm happy here doesn't mean I'm going to re-sign here. And I thought that that was a very interesting quote, because why volunteer that information? Why even acknowledge that at this point in the season?
Corbin, I think to that point, it goes back to having the leverage. In the NBA, it's a players' league. You know, the players run the league. The owners don't have, they have control over it, but nothing like the NFL or the MLB. So, it's like LeBron signing the 1-year deals. It's, I'm happy, but there's a chance. So, it sucks. It stinks, for these lower market teams, like Cleveland and Oklahoma City, because if they lose their star players, it's, you're only going to be able to rebuild through the draft, or unless you throw a lot of money at something.
Right, and of course with the new CBA, it's a lot more teams are looking to build through the draft, a big reason why first-round picks were so hard to come by this trade deadline, and why people held on to them so much harder than other years. Yeah. So for me, I'm looking at it as the Cavs, they need to build through the draft just like every team, because if they lose a guy like LeBron James, or OKC loses a guy like Paul George, just like you said, in a smaller market, you can't use your city to entice people to come there. You have to use your plan and your team. But that's just a shout out to Sam Presti at Oklahoma City. He was able to bring in this big three with not much else around. They were able to build through the draft with Steven Adams and, Roberson and all that stuff. They were able to build a good team there with Westbrook as well. And imagine if they kept KD or Harden, one of the two. That would have been a dynasty there too. But just keeping Westbrook there, they're lucky to keep him there. And Paul George, for him, he just came to the – when they were playing the Lakers, there were chants from the fans about him being in L.A., and whatever chants there were, there was multiple. And at the end of the game, he said, hopefully it was just them, kind of just being happy I'm home. Just his answer was kind of dumb. It was kind of just, of course they're happy you're home. They want you to be here. His entire family was at the game, just like they are every time he plays in L.A. It's for him, it makes sense, just like you said, with Cleveland and LeBron James and him wanting to have his kids go to that high school and him and his wife loving that city. That does play a factor in this, too, and people don't look at that enough.
It's the tail end of his career, Perry. Does he really want to pack his family
up? He's not a young bachelor.
Go to LA or Houston.
Exactly.
And I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to say it. Why would you go to the Western Conference if you're LeBron James?
Why would you risk playing
the Golden State Warriors and not even in the finals? You have to beat them to get to the finals.
Yeah, we completely agree. Going to the West when you're already in the East, when you're looking for an easy route, is...
If you're LeBron James and you go to the West, you play the Rockets in one round, and then what's your reward if you beat them? You play the Warriors in the next round.
And don't get me wrong, I understand the argument. Even if it's in the Western Conference, the argument of, it's his best chance to win. It all comes down where you think you're going to be able to win it all at. And if he really wants to believe it's in the Western Conference, as much as it would stink as a Cavs fan and such a big Cleveland fan for him to leave, I'd be really interested to see who the heck was going to join his team, in the West. Because if I see him joining a team in the West, I see him joining the Rockets, playing with James Harden, playing with Chris Paul, and having his buddy Carmelo come sign over in the offseason.
The Banana Boat Squad.
From strictly a basketball perspective, none of those off-court things considered. And Michael, I want to get your take on this. I think the Philadelphia Sixers make a ton of sense, just with all the talent that they have. And, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, as long as they can stay healthy, along with LeBron James, in the Eastern Conference, that makes a ton of sense
to me.
Imagine
if they get
I love watching Philly. I think they're one of the best up-and-coming teams. And who knows what you even got in Markelle Fultz at this point.
Right.
I know the guy seemingly forgot how to shoot a basketball, apparently. But, you know, you never want to count out a first-round great talent like that. So I think that'd be very intriguing for LeBron. It's just, God, man. Does he really want to leave home at this point? And, you know, of course, Cleveland media and all of us are going to say, you know, he obviously wants to stay home. But, you know, we firmly believe that, you know, that he just loves the, you know, Northeast Ohio area. So it's very confusing when, you know, talking where the heck LeBron James is going to play, because it's just such a big player and it's such a big piece to a team. I mean, you saw the Heat, you know, When he left the Heat, they deteriorated for a little bit. When he left the Cavs, they became the worst team in the league. So it's like, you know, he is definitely the most important player on whatever team he's going to be on.
100%. And working off the 76ers, just like we said with Fultz, it breaks my heart to see the videos that I've been watching. It's just, he can't.
Broken. Perry's jumper's broken.
He can't shoot it. He couldn't even shoot a free throw. I was watching him just taking free throws, and it was just. It looked like he was hesitating, but also just thinking too much, and his arm was kind of just like double clutching and naturally. It was just very weird.
It's so strange because he had such a good looking jump shot when he was playing at Washington.
And it's scary
yes,
to see.
Yes, I know.
It was such a quick just fall for him because we were all like, how long is Markelle Fultz going to be out? It's okay. You know, he's just working on it. It's just a typical 76ers rookie coming in banged up. It's just how it works. Now, when I saw the first video, I kept hearing that his shot was messed up, but he couldn't shoot a basket. He couldn't even hit the rim on one of the shots that he was taking until he started adjusting to this awkward release 45 seconds into the video. But if you're going to shoot that same way every single time, 100 times, at some point you're going to figure out how to get the ball in the hoop. But it's just not natural. There's no way that he's got one bit of confidence. And it looks amazing for the Celtics, by the way, who made this trade. And Jason Tatum looks like this 19-year-old beast who is – the ceiling for him is – I can't even see the ceiling for him. It's that high. So Jason Tatum, that's a move from the Celtics. But just back onto the topic, LeBron James going there without Fultz. I don't even care if Fultz is there. Just with Simmons and Embiid and, you know, Dario Saric and Robert Covington and the team that they have. Even JJ Redick, who added the veteran presence that they didn't have on that team and the shooting that they needed on the outside. That team could be an awesome fit. And we get to all, you know, keep him in the East as well. So that stays away from the West conversation we were just having. So bringing that up for me, I like that a lot. Going to the 76ers would make a lot of sense. Just like how it would make sense for him to go play with the Lakers young players like Ingram.
It's just
and,
then you're not
and,
in the West.
And Lonzo, exactly, except for you're in the East.
And I'd say, I don't even think it's a debate. There's more talent, young talent in Philadelphia than in Los Angeles.
I'd rather play with Ben Simmons and Embiid.
Guys,
all right.
We're on the rookie conversation. How the hell does Magic Johnson take Big Baller last year in that draft? So guys, I thought that was the biggest joke, you know, was with Lonzo Ball and his dad. Oh my goodness, he can't talk about someone who can't shoot a jumper. That guy, oh my God, he's shooting a slingshot. I'm really surprised. I'm very surprised Magic decided to go down the road of LeVar Ball and his kids. I really thought that they should have took, you know, another player if it's Smith Jr., whoever the heck, anybody but that guy, guys. Seriously. So, you know, you guys are the closest, you know, a lot closer than I am with the Lakers. Why was that guy taken so high, and especially, you know, by the Lakers? Was it just, you know, one of the things that got caught up in the whole Ball drama and that they're from here? Or is it that they thought that he was actually, you know, going to be, a really good player? Not saying that he can't be, but
it's a little bit of both, them buying into Lonzo Ball, but also LeVar Ball talking this into existence and the whole Lonzo Ball to L.A. thing. I think it was it put pressure on the front office. It put pressure on the fan base. It put pressure on Lonzo to perform better for him than in other teams. It seemed like everyone was working extremely hard to make this work, and Magic and them were just working out Josh Jackson and other players that they were talking like they were confident on that they were going to take. I thought they were taking Josh Jackson up until a few weeks before the draft. So, and it's funny to see how Josh Jackson might be the most unspectacular rookie in the top five this year. But he's starting to play better with the Suns, of course. But yeah, with Lonzo, it's he's the only player out of this draft that is a, he's special in a different way. I know he's not going to jump off the stat sheet for you, just like you said, with his shot and everything like that. But they didn't get him to come in here and make a shot. They didn't bring him in to be the next face of the Lakers, in my opinion. But
well, he's one of the
faces. The point. He's supposed to be one of the faces. He's the perfect building piece for what they're trying to build there. I think that you think that they're going after him to make the difference that Dennis Smith Jr. is going to make on the Mavs, or some of these like Jason Tatum would have made if Kyrie Irving and Hayward weren't there. You know, just a guy that could immediately become your star, just like Kuzma is playing the way that he's playing with the Lakers right now. Of course, he's older, he's closer towards our age and had a lot more year of development, but just looking at how he's able to contribute right away in the offensive end. Lonzo is just the kind of guy that he can make passes that no other player in the league really can, like those full court passes and some of the thing. I know that you see it with, of course, Kevin Love and LeBron making passes that no other players can. Kevin Love with his full court passes and LeBron just with LeBron insane vision of everything. Yeah. But Lonzo's got both of their attributes when it comes to passing in his arsenal, and he's also rebounds better than pretty much any point guard in the league. And he's not a converted power forward. He's a true point guard. But I see what you mean with he isn't the kind of player that you pick to change your entire team, in my opinion. He's a player that you pick to fit in with your plan. And I think that...
Yeah, guys, I understand, you know, he's a role player and he's going to help, you know, more down the road than, you know, as a, you know, a bona fide superstar. But I just think that, you know, who the heck's going to want to come and play with that circus with LeVar Ball? I think the best thing the Lakers can do right now is to cut their losses and get rid of that kid while they can, especially while they're trying to, you know, advertise themselves to sign big names and to sign big players and to convince them not coming, that it's not just going to be the LeVar show.
He does, you know, he does make players better. And let's say that he has a normal father and his father's not LeVar Ball. Do you like Lonzo?
We don't have this conversation.
Do you like Lonzo Ball a lot better in that in form? Your main reasoning right now is probably you. It's more than just Lonzo. It's the baggage that comes with it.
It's the TV show. Yeah. It's the little brothers going to Lithuania and throwing up West Side gang signs after they score a basket against a guy that Perry can take to the lane. I don't know, guys. I'm not bought in with the Balls. I never was, and I never will. And I stand by saying that Lonzo will be the best one out of any of their kids.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. I think with Lonzo Ball, just the hype surrounding him, and a lot of it had to do with his dad, there was just so much hype going into this year that anything short of being an all-star this year, it was going to be a disappointment. And you look at Lonzo Ball's season, he's been out for about a month with a sprained MCL. At the beginning of the season, he got off to a terrible start, one of the worst starts of any top rookie ever as far as shooting goes, field goal percentage and three-point percentage.
Yeah.
But as the season went along, especially his last, I believe, 10 to 12 games before his sprained MCL, he was shooting it much better. His field goal percentage improved on the year from 30%. Now it's up to 35.6, which obviously is still terrible, but it's going in the right direction. And for it to be at 30% until about the new year speaks to what he's done since.
Yeah.
3-point percentage went up from 20% up to 30%. And then as far as just how he affects the game in so many different ways. Yes, he's not a tremendous scorer, and he's never going to be. That's not his game. He's averaging 10 points a game. I really don't think he'll ever get anywhere higher than 15, 16
points
per game.
Points is right.
But as a rookie, he's got 7.1 rebounds and 7.1 assists a game. You look at the defensive side of the ball, and the stats don't really show it. He is averaging 1.5 steals a game. But coming into the draft, I thought Lonzo Ball was the right pick if Fultz wasn't available. Fultz was my favorite player. I didn't know everything that was going to happen to him with his jump shot. But Lonzo Ball, the thing that scared me the most was his defense. In college, he got burned. In the summer league, when they were playing the Clippers, he couldn't guard Kendall Marshall. Kendall Marshall's one of the most unathletic players to ever play point guard in the NBA in the past 10 years.
Tar Heel. Tar Heel.
So that was what was really scary to me. But in the regular season, he's been not just average defensively. He's been a plus for the Lakers on the defensive side of the ball. So that's been the most surprisingly good thing about him. And I just think it's too early to say definitively they shouldn't have gone with Lonzo Ball. They should have gone with maybe, say, Jason Tatum or Donovan Mitchell or
Donovan Mitchell, Jr. That's my guy. Yeah, I couldn't. So, guys, funny Donovan Mitchell story. When his team at Louisville, when they lost to Michigan, I looked at my friends. I said, hey, I don't know who the hell that kid is, and it's the first time I ever watched that guy, but I think he's going to be pretty good. And sure enough, man, I mean, my goodness, who would have thought this kid would have flew under the radar like that? I know, you know, he was taken as kind of a lottery pick with the Jazz, but my God, I know he flew under my radar until I actually watched him play.
Yeah, I mean, he flew under all of our radar, and he isn't just a high-flying dunker like he was known for when he was getting recruited out of high school. He's expanded his game on all ends. He's good on the defensive end. He's a great shooter. He's a great passer. So all of his – I know his mentor is CP3, and so Chris Paul has got a ton of confidence in him. They used to work out together when right before he came into the league, and he was helping him out. So I know Chris Paul is very high on him, helped him out with his vision and his passing on top of his crazy dunking. But for the back to the Lonzo and the Lakers, I think the Lakers got really lucky this year that they were able to draft Kyle Kuzma, because he's taken off some of the attention of Lonzo Ball, and it's kind of been the two of them together and how great we hit it in the draft in general. And Josh Hart's been playing amazing as of lately. I don't know, you're probably not a – don't know his name too much, but he's one of the grittier players
that we draft. From Villanova. Yeah, Villanova. He was part of that championship squad.
Yeah, exactly. He's a two-way player. He's really good on the defensive end. He's a great hustle player, but he's a great role player. But Kuzma came in. He's 21, 22 years old, so he's clearly had the progression that other players that are coming in at 19 haven't had. So he has that scary offensive build, and he's able to put up points like crazy off the bench for us right now. So having Lonzo and Kuzma, it's to me, that's saved this year, because I know Lonzo's had a bad start and he's been out for about a month. But Kuzma picked up the slack, and the two of them together, they have a great relationship. I know that with Brandon Ingram too. It looks like they have a pretty good formula there, and I like the formula that they have. If it was just Lonzo Ball and he was getting drafted to be the savior of this awful team, that's not the right direction to go. But Magic Johnson sees him as this facilitator and as a guy who does much more than just take over the game with his scoring like a Trae Young or, you know, a Curry or any of those players. He's nothing like that. He's going to be
Even though his dad said he's better.
Even though, of course. But LaVar Ball, I know he's the worst when it comes to his personality and winning people over. But Lonzo's extremely humble, and he's very unspoken. Yeah,
he's a nice kid.
He runs with this, and he makes fun of his dad as well. And he has a really good time with it. But I know, speaking of Lonzo, I'm just going to mention this super quick. He's actually dropping his first mixtape/album. He announced it on his Twitter last night. He's actually pretty good at rapping. He's just kind of like Damian Lillard, who's also extremely good at rapping. I know I brought this up in a past podcast, but I love seeing basketball mixed with music. But yeah, take a look at Lonzo Ball's mixtape whenever it does come out. I know he's got a concert coming up in Lithuania, which is super weird. But
God.
Yeah, I mean, Lonzo Ball, you love it or hate it. I know you hate it, especially being from Cleveland. It's perfect for L.A., him and that family.
Hey, it's not that I hate it. I don't hate Lonzo.
But imagine them in a random city. You know what I mean? That's not L.A. Yeah. Imagine him getting drafted by the Memphis Grizzlies and LeVar and them being in Memphis. It wouldn't work. Nobody would like it. With them in L.A., I don't know why. It's too perfect. I think it was written this way.
Yeah. Yep. And I see totally where you're coming from.
Michael, I know you touched on the Kyrie and possible knee surgery if he had stayed with the Cavs earlier. So that report came out, and then a reporter asked Kyrie Irving point blank if he was going to have knee surgery if he stayed with the Cavs. He flat out denied it. Perry and I had a little speculation about if we thought it was true or not. Based on what you've heard, was he going to have knee surgery if he stayed with the Cavs and missed this year? And if he was, is that something that, even though he doesn't need knee surgery right now with the Celtics, is that something that might play a factor later on that he might need to have?
Yeah, put it this way. Kyrie was going to sit out no matter what if the Cavs decided to keep him on their roster. And, you know, you didn't want that drama show going into media day, or let alone going into the preseason. So, you know, people say how much they thought the Cavs botched that situation by getting Isaiah Crowder in that pick and having Crowder and Isaiah disappear already and only having the pick. But, I mean, that's how I feel about that. But as far as Kyrie and being, you know, injury prone, look at that guy's medical chart. They put Kyrie's medical chart on ESPN one day, and he's basically hurt everything. Ankle, knee, wrist, face, nose, like, his whole body has been banged up. And, you know, before he even went to the NBA, he, you know, was banged up and missed and only played 3 regular season games.
Right.
So it's something looking forward, but I don't know. You know, a gamer like Kyrie Irving, you can only hope that he doesn't get hurt, because I'm still a Kyrie Irving fan. I think Kyrie leaving had more to do with his name getting dropped during the summer in free agency. I think he heard his name being shopped around, you know, for Paul George, for Jimmy Butler. I don't know if you guys remember when the Cavs were in a lot of rumors of getting Jimmy Butler and Paul George, but apparently, you know, David Griffin or somebody, you know, within the front office was mentioning that Kyrie might be, you know, be getting traded, and I feel like he really, really took that to heart and kind of considered himself an untouchable and untradeable, you know, as you think someone, you know, would think Kyrie Irving. I mean, my God, if you're the Cavs, you'd think he'd be untouchable. But I don't know. Nobody knows the true story. Put it this way, guys. In my reporting career, I am going to do everything I can to find out the truth. Even if it's off the record and I'm not allowed to say anything to anybody, I'm completely okay with that. Because, you know, I'm probably a bigger Cavs fan than any team in town. You know, we love football. We love our baseball team. But for me, you know, going to those playoff games when I was younger and watching LeBron and, you know, going through the championship runs. And, you know, so I'm Cavs guy. And I just, you know, this whole situation is just really, really frustrating for Cavs fans, especially now that, you know, it's February and we have a whole new team.
How did it get that bad, though? Because I remember right when Kyrie got traded, I said to Perry, you think 18 months before he got traded, he was hitting the game winner in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. I never would have thought a year and a half later he's not on the roster. Was it just all of a sudden within the past offseason and the season leading up to when he got traded, or had it kind of been brewing ever since LeBron got there?
So there was a rumor, you know, Kyrie wanted to be the guy in Cleveland. He didn't want, you know, to have, I mean, obviously you would want LeBron James on your basketball team, but that kid thought he was going to have his own team and that the Cavs are going to build around him and have him be the centerpiece. But then when LeBron came home, that changed everything. So there was always that mentality that, you know, you thought Kyrie, you know, thought he was good enough to lead his own team and be the guy and take all the shots. So there's that perspective. And then there's the perspective that, you know, I said that maybe he had a falling out with LeBron James, or maybe he was just so hurt the fact that his name was being, you know, talked about in trade news that, you know, he was so sick over it. You know, he hit the biggest shot in Cavalier history and maybe NBA Finals history. So, you know, you would think that you would be an untouchable, but I think it's a mixture of both of those things. And I firmly believe that Kyrie really wanted to be the lone star superstar in Cleveland, you know, and have it be his team, quote unquote.
Right. And I for me personally, I've always said this, and it backs me up even more seeing him play this year. I think he can be that number one guy, and I don't think I want to have him be my number one guy. But he definitely can be, and on a team like the Celtics where they have such a deep roster already, and that's without Gordon Hayward, imagine him being back as well. Kyrie is the leader of that team, but he's not the sole talent on that team, and there's a big difference there. And I think that's the perfect situation for him for when, you know, LeBron left the Cavs. The first time they went from, you know, debatably the best team in the East year in and year out, to an awful, awful joke of a basketball team just because one player left and they had to spend years with these first picks having to try and fix it. So for me, I don't know. I can see Kyrie as a player that can be that number one guy, and I think he's proved that. But do you want him as your number one guy? Not as a Cavs fan or anything, but do you give the keys to Kyrie and trust that he'll be able to lead you in the playoffs and give you a chance year in and year out, or is he never going to be that guy?
I think he could be that guy. And guys, he's only 20, 25, 26 years old. Now imagine when this kid is Chris Paul's age, 28, you know, when it's 30-some, when he's Kevin Durant's age at 28, 29, he's going to be the best point guard in the league. So, you know, Chris Paul is not going to be, you know, the best point guard in the league for too long. Russell Westbrook, you know, he's getting up there too. I know he's still, you know, in the prime of his career, but there's going to be a point where Kyrie Irving's probably going to be the MVP of the league, and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with him having his own team, and I think a team that could be built around specifically for Kyrie could be a very dangerous team. I mean, my goodness, you see in Boston right now, the two wing players in Tatum and Brown, I mean, my God, they're high-flying young kids that could run for days. So, you know, I definitely see a team brewing there in Boston that's, you know, with Kyrie Irving. I think they're a big man away, I think. If they're able to add, you know, somebody along the caliber of DeMarcus Cousins or Anthony Davis, I think that, you know, they really start contending with the Warriors after that.
Yeah, I totally see that. So just speaking of Kyrie and how much that had to have hurt to see him leave originally, I have a quick question about this trade deadline. Just out of the players that you guys sent away, Isaiah Thomas, Dwayne Wade, Derrick Rose, Iman Shumpert, Jay Crowder, Channing Frye, who's the one player for you personally that hurts the most losing them?
I'm going to go with Channing Frye. He was kind of the heart and soul of that locker room when things weren't too good. So I'm going to go Channing Frye. I just feel like he brings a lot more to the table than just a pure basketball talent standpoint. I you know, there are a lot of things going on behind the scenes that he was doing for the team. And if it's, you know, having, you know, team dinners and going out, setting up a team events like bowling and stuff, you know. So I think it's going to be Channing Frye. Personally, guys, everybody else on that list, I'm thrilled to have off my basketball team.
Just good riddance,
you know,
kind of thing?
Yep, good riddance for the rest of them, except for Dwayne Wade, because he did give us some pretty good minutes. You know, it's really nice to see him go back to Miami, but at the same time, with the emergence of Chetty Osman, he wouldn't have been playing that much.
Yeah,
anyway.
Osman's playing great basketball lately with finally getting any minutes to play. He's been playing extremely efficient, just like how Nance will put up those similar numbers. Those are two guys you're going to go to off your bench to give you efficient play on both ends of the floor and be a plus player on the court. But for me, just looking at this list, it really kills me to see how Jay Crowder worked out in Cleveland, because when he got there in the Isaiah trade, that was my favorite part of the trade.
That was a huge piece of the trade.
In my opinion,
too,
he was the most underrated part of that trade.
And
he's
on a really good contract.
On an extremely good contract, he's a defensive-minded player that can score the ball as well. He's the kind of defense wins championships kind of guy that you want on your team if you put him in the right spot. And I don't think he's good enough to be in a championship team starting five, but he's a perfect seventh or eighth man to bring off the bench, and even better depending on the squad. Like, but I'm talking a championship constructed roster.
Depending on the team, I could see him as a starter.
Yeah, I know Jay Crowder could start. I'm just saying, bring him off the bench or something like that. He reminds me of how Robert Covington plays. Just extreme hustle and just grit on defense, but just it didn't work out in Cleveland. What I want to know for you, was it more of just the fit with the system, or was it just him not, you know, playing the same way he's played in years past? Is it more?
I think it was him being outside of the Brad Stevens system. I think people underestimate how good the Brad Stevens system is, and I think you saw that with Isaiah Thomas too. Obviously, Isaiah was hurt as well. But, you know, LeBron's iso ball. The Cavs are iso ball. When Isaiah started playing iso ball with LeBron and the Cavs, it wouldn't work out. You know, with Brad Stevens, they're running cuts. They're running plays. You know, they're running plays to specific people. You know, it seems like for the Cavs, you know, it's just more freestyle rather than that, traditional style of play with the Celtics and calling plays.
Something you and I brought up earlier is the lack of plays.
That's the only thing, Perry, I could really think of why they didn't really pan out, because I was always a fan of Jay Crowder when he was in Boston.
Yeah, and for me, I just saw with Isaiah Thomas, and I read a bunch of things about him blaming, not recently, and I don't know how great, I don't know if these were words exactly from his mouth, but I read that it was just, he didn't think the Cavaliers could even make in-game coaching decisions. Just the system wasn't a good fit on any end. I think everyone that was close to the situation all disagreed on all. He wasn't completely healthy, but that's not even what we're going to be looking at here. It was just the fact that me and you were talking earlier about just the fact that the Cavaliers don't have a super deep playbook and they don't have a ton of plays when you have LeBron James. You don't need to. And that's why the coaches like Spoelstra and like Ty Lue are able to, you know, ride the LeBron wave. But for me, like I Isaiah Thomas is such a good player if you put him in the right system. And just like you said with the Brad Stevens system, I think that's why he excelled there. And it just showed that in Cleveland, he couldn't figure it out. But with the Lakers tonight, Isaiah Thomas made his debut with them. He came off the bench and put in 30 minutes. And he put up 22 points and 6 assists. So those are great numbers right there. And it's 7 for 12 field goals, 4 for 8 3-point. So that's 50% from those are the numbers you guys were expecting this year. You guys were expecting him to be that kind of player. It even weirds me out even more to see that kind of stat line for the Lakers tonight. Was it just, oh, I'm so glad to be out of Cleveland. Let's just, you know, prove everybody right tonight. And it just, the shots kind of, you know, were falling for him. Or was this just showing that he's still the same Isaiah Thomas, but for some reason, in a Cleveland Cavaliers jersey, he couldn't make a basketball? Is that just...
I think it's more the fact that Thomas needs the ball in his hand and takes up the ball, and LeBron needs the ball in his hand and takes up the ball. You know, those are two guys that are him and LeBron that need the ball in their hands. And I just think it came down to the fact that Isaiah was just trying to do so much and forcing the issue on so many things because, you know, it was such a big trade and he wanted to be good for the Cavs. And I just feel like it was something that was never going to work out. And, you know, the Cavs are just so bad defensively as it is before they had Isaiah Thomas, and they bring Isaiah back, and it's, my goodness, it's times 10 the difference, you know, of watching a basketball game with Isaiah being on the court defensively. So it's like a coffee smudge on the paper. It's like, you know, you don't want to look at it, but it's just so bad that you can't help not to look at it.
Yeah, I was looking at the numbers, and with him on the court with the Cleveland Cavaliers, they had the worst defensive rating out of any with a player on the court out of any player in the last two decades. Is something that I read, and it was, I don't know exactly which game, I think it was game 13 that he was with the team. It was 15, right before the end.
15 games.
No, but I think I read this after about game 12 or game 13, so it wasn't, I don't know if that's how the numbers ended with his short Cleveland Cavaliers career, but when he was on the floor, they, you know, it was 4-on-5 for defense, and, you know, as a Laker fan, he's a liability to be there, but I think it's going to help with shooting, but they didn't grab him in this trade. This was, you know, they're on expiring contracts.
Perry, this was something for the Lakers that it's going to finish the season out for him. I don't see the Lakers pursuing Isaiah Thomas after this year unless, you know, he starts averaging 25 a game and getting back to the old player that he was. But there is also a growing concern with the Cavs that they wanted him to stay out until April, but he was very adamant that, you know, he wanted to come back and, you know, prove himself. And, you know, so there's also the fact that the guy's not even healthy.
So you think he just came back too soon?
I'm a firm believer the man is having trouble moving laterally.
Wow. Yeah, and it really surprised me to hear Channing Frye being the guy that it hurts most to leave the team and not a player like, you know, Shumpert, who's been there and contributed in his own right. I know that he's got a tough contract and needed to leave, and I know Dwayne Wade put in some solid minutes for you, but Channing Frye is, you know, not the name that you expect to hear from you.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, these past couple of games when the Cavs started, you know, finally starting to win some after that big losing streak, it seemed like that Channing Frye was the guy, you know, that was providing the spark with his threes and his grunt and his grit on defense. You know, he's not really known as a defensive player, but, you know, he was really starting to show that, you know, gritty Cleveland basketball again that won us the championship. But, you know, he's such a good guy, and you hate to see him go.
Let's get you out of here. We got two more questions for you again. Michael, thank you so much for doing this with us.
Yes, of course.
So my question to you, so we talked a little bit earlier on the podcast about just the struggles that the Cavs have had. Now, it kind of just seems like every year around this time they have struggles, but this year it's just been worse than in years past. There's been some reports, not really about Tyronn Lue about to be fired, but people have been asking LeBron James, speculating about, is he going to see the same fate that David Blatt had? When David Blatt was fired, Cavs were in first place. They're in third place right now. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being he has nothing to worry about and 10 being he's gone by tonight, but where do you rank his job security? And then also just GM Kobe Altman. I know he hasn't had as much time there, but what do you think about how he's done?
So I think Lou's making it the season no matter what. If they were going to make a coaching trade, a coaching change, it would have been before the deadline, you know, to get the new coach, whoever, you know, they thought was going to be there. But the thing with David Blatt and how this is different from David Blatt never coached in the NBA. And David Blatt went to the Cavaliers after day one and told them it was his way or the highway. And the players kind of looked at each other like, man, this dude's crazy. You know, it seemed like it was something that was doomed from the start. Ty Lue's a player's coach. He won in 2016. So I'm going to defer on that. I'm going to say he has nothing to worry about, so like a two or a three. But also, he better have looming in the back of his mind that if he can't get this rotation down with the young kids, that this is definitely something that's going to be a problem moving forward because he couldn't get the rotation down with Crowder or Isaiah or, you know, any of the other guys that we traded.
If you can't get two rotations down in the year, there's something wrong. If the original rotation just wouldn't fit right and then you make a complete roster flip and you're still not able to figure it out, the common denominator has to be the coach at that point.
Yep. So then as you're, Corbin, your question for Kobe Altman, you know, I thought at the time the Isaiah trade and the Jake Crowder trade and the Brooklyn pick was brilliant, but, you know, it proved that there's some backlash on that. But I feel like, you know, the damage control he was able to pull before the February 8th deadline was a work of magic. So, you know, we'll see how this thing ends up, but, you know, I'm going to give Kobe Altman a B+, A- grade for the deadline.
And the word damage control they use right there is so perfect for the job that he's done ever since the Kyrie trade. That was all out of damage control, and he was able to pull gold out of his butt with getting the return that he was able to, and then now making one of the most dramatic flips of a team possibly ever at the deadline. It just showed the composure that he has as the GM right now, and he's able to wheel and deal like no other. And there was not one trade that they made that you got that you can probably say, wow, that was a completely awful trade. What are you doing? Every trade made sense in its own right. And at this point, he's given the team an opportunity to, you know, revamp for a championship right now when, you know, the other team was just cloudy days. But he gave them a chance for sunnier weather in Cleveland, you know what I mean? Before him, it just seemed like nothing was going to change beyond the LeBron James era. Now for me, with Kobe Altman there, I have confidence that if LeBron leaves, he'll be able to figure it out just fine.
Yep, and I reiterate what I said. So, you know, I just think Kobe Altman and Ty Lue, they don't have anything to worry about as of right now. But this whole thing could blow up, you know, in their face faster than they made that deal happen.
Just the last question for you, or we'll let you run out of here. Just, is this roster as currently constructed enough to win a championship this year? Is this what the moves that they were able to make, were they able to pull it together enough, and you think they're able to build the chemistry quick enough to make that championship run this year?
I think with a LeBron James team, you always have a chance to win the championship. And I also think if the young players get it quick enough and start playing good with LeBron, I think definitely you're a championship contender, especially when you get Kevin Love back in April. So let's imagine that the Cavs are rolling and they end up with the 2 seed and, you know, they don't have home court, but, you know, Boston's number 1 seed. And I just see Kevin Love coming back, and if these guys are gelling together, that, you know, I'm going to take LeBron and the Cavs. But there's also the sense that Golden State's too much. There's also a sense that Oklahoma City would be too much. There's also a sense that the Houston Rockets would be too much. I definitely see the Cavs getting back to the finals. I really do not see us losing to Kyrie Irving, and I certainly don't see us losing to Toronto because they seem to blow it every year and, you know, be real big choke artists when it comes to that. But, you know, pen me in on the Cavs going to the finals. Pencil me in on them being able to win a championship.
Yeah, no, I love that take. And, you know, a LeBron James team you can never, ever count out. And for him, I'm just excited to see the kind of mentorship he's able to provide for these young players and to see how fast they can whip it together. Because I know you asked me this question earlier. Did they get better? I don't know how to answer that question quite yet because I need to see how they play together. But the answer to that is that they got younger, much younger, and they got much more athletic, and they've given themselves a chance to build a better culture there. So all signs point towards sunnier days in Cleveland, and that's a huge testament to Kobe Altman. He was able to make a lot happened out of nothing.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, definitely. Again, Michael, thank you so much for doing this. We really appreciate it. Thank you guys all so much for listening. If you've stuck around this long, this is NBA Unwrapped, where we unwrap the hottest takes from around the NBA. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at NBA Unwrapped. You can follow me on Twitter at CorbinMRPK. Perry on Twitter at Perry Aston. And Michael, one more time, what was your Twitter handle?
It is at MikeRizzo22. So MikeRizzo22.
So yeah, go follow Mike if you want to get all the top news on all Cleveland sports, especially Cavaliers. He's all over it. Just again, thank you so much for being on with us. It was such a pleasure having him on. Such a fun podcast today. And we hope all you guys enjoyed episode 17. Pretty much all things Cavs. Trade deadline edition. So thank you guys so much. Take a look at our Twitter. Show us some love. Love having you guys on there and starting stimulating conversations. So thank you guys for being as active as you are. Thank you for tuning in to episode 17 with Mike Rizzo, Perry Aston, and Corbin Weinerman. We thank you guys so much for tuning in today.